Welcome back to the Epic Universal Podcast. I'm entertainment writer Jim Hill, and I'm joined this evening by my talented co-host, Eric Hersey. And he and I are recording this week's episode on Thursday, March 28th. Where what? Nothing. Nothing happened today, right? Eric, absolutely nothing worth noting, right?
No. Universal only teased something briefly on a social media message that the 28th was a big deal. And just so happened, you know, I made sure to be aware and online this morning to see if anything did happen. Jim, did something happen?
Well, yes, we actually learned about yet another land that's going to be part of the Epic Universe Park, the one that's under construction now and will open in early 2025. And I have to say, I'm especially excited about this one because I have been a fan of the How to Train Your Dragon movies since the very first one came out. In fact, 14 years ago this month, March 2010.
So, Jim, I'm excited as well, but for totally different reasons. Jim, did you know that I'm actually named after a Viking? So here's the story. So my dad was as redhead as you possibly could be. And my mom had, they had three different children and I was going to be their last. So at the end of the day, she says, I want this boy to have red hair. And they named me Eric after Eric the Red. But guess what?
Eric the Red. That
guess
is
what? That
so
did not
cool.
happen. But needless to say, I have a fondness towards Vikings, because of that. So super excited about this. Unfortunately, have not seen the movies in its entirety, but luckily I've had plenty of time today to hang out on IMDb and find out what's going on. And I even totaled the amount here. If I have 304 minutes over this weekend, I could watch all three films. So that might actually just happen.
Okay, now before we get to that, and we will talk about this, we should probably note that we do have a sponsor. In fact, a lovely sponsor, touringplans.com. Touring Plans can help you save time. It can help you save money when you go down to Florida and check out all those theme parks. So please, if you have a trip to Central Florida in your future, which supposedly Eric and his lovely family do, to check out the Universal, Orlando theme parks, please check them out at touringplans.com. Okay, so all right, let's just start at the top here, because again, I'm going to tell you right off the bat, you don't necessarily need to watch 2 and 3. I mean, don't get me wrong, 3 has a lovely close to the series, but if you only have time, watch the first one. The original How to Train Your Dragon. By the way, as a Disney fan, you need to note this one was directed by Chris Sanders and Dean Dubois, the team behind Disney's original hand-drawn version of Lilo and Stitch. In fact, Toothless, the dragon, and Stitch are definitely second.
Right. They have striking similarities in what I've seen online.
So, all right. So that film, again, comes out hugely successful. And so immediately, you know, okay, we're going to do sequels, do this one. But what's interesting is out ahead of the sequel, there was a How to Train Your Dragon live spectacular that began touring the country in the summer of 2012. And this was DreamWorks getting in bed with the folks who did the Walking with Dinosaurs. Did you ever see that arena show with the giant sort of animatronic dinosaurs and all that?
No, you know, that sounds super familiar, as if I must have saw some type of cartoon or like commercial of that, but I've never, like, it's not ringing a bell in terms of visuals.
No, seriously, you got some time, go on YouTube, check this out. In fact, one of the things I regret one of my biggest regrets in life, Eric, was I had to fly out to California for a press event when How to Train Your Dragon Live Spectacular arrived in my area. The show was being presented at the Digital Credit Union Center in Worcester, Massachusetts. So in my place, Nancy drove down to Worcester and attended the press event. And when I got off the plane, she just blithered at me because it's like, oh my God, the dragons were so cool and they were huge and I got to pet them. And it's like, ow. Okay. Anyway, all right. So How to Train Your Dragon 2 comes out June of 2014. Now, what's interesting is the first film was released to theaters by Paramount. Second film, because DreamWorks had now cut a deal with 20th Century Fox, it goes out as a Fox release. But jump ahead, 2 years, April of 2016, Universal buys DreamWorks for $3.8 billion. And now, from this point forward, DreamWorks is going to, their films are only going to be released by Universal. So what's kind of fascinating about this story is that this hugely successful screaming to be in a theme park franchise doesn't actually start to move into this space until after Universal buys them, because obviously NBC Universal has theme parks where Fox and Paramount are, you know, they have a finger in theme parks, but they really don't have places they could move these characters. Anyway, we jump ahead now to the third How to Train Your Dragon movie. That's The Hidden World. That gets released in February 2019. And this is where Universal starts to flex. All right, to help promote this movie, November of 2019, there is a 72-foot-long toothless balloon in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. And then the very same month that this movie goes out in theaters, February of 2019, there's a toothless walk-around that starts making an appearance daily at Universal Studios Hollywood. And prior to that, to sort of, you know, wet their whistle, so to speak, and get a toehold, the very first appearance in a Universal park by the How to Train Your Dragon characters was in the DreamWorks Theater, which opened out in Hollywood in June of 2018. And in the pre-show there for Kung Fu Panda, The Emperor's Quest, you can see Hiccup and Toothless. You know, they make an appearance and, you know, they kind of like, I don't want to be involved in this. Anyway, before we now launch into talking about what's going to be built at Epic Universe, it's worth noting that one of the centerpiece shows of this new land at Epic Universe is going to be the Untamable show, which actually debuted with Universal Studios Beijing back in September of 2001. And it's what's weird, and this is one of the reasons why I wanted to talk up the How to Train Your Dragon live spectacular, because we're back to full-size dragons on stage. In fact, this show is built around Hiccup trying to tame a storm cutter. That's the dragon that his mom, Valka, used to fly. And just to sort of bring this full circle, just as kind of a reminder that Universal is not just in the How to Train Your Dragon theme park business there. They're continuing the live action version of How to Train Your Dragon began filming January 15th of this year over in Ireland. And Dean Dubois, the director of the last two How to Train Your Dragon animated movies, is directing the live action film. And this is going to be out in 2025. So, all right. Anyway, I'm sorry. You kind of needed that backstory to understand, you know, what we're about to talk about.
You're a lot better than IMDb, Jim. Let's just be real. That's
all right. Well, anyway,
it's always nice when somebody can just give you the real facts and some hidden tips and insights along the way. So they didn't say anything about Dean Dubois and what's coming up. So I'm excited. So let me ask you real quick, because I'm picturing this walk around toothless. What would be like the equivalent in my Disney brain?
Well, okay. Now where this gets interesting is that you can go online now. And again, if you Google Universal Hollywood toothless, you will see the walk around for 2019. And it's clearly somebody in a suit who's not very comfortable.
Okay.
You know, because it's a tough character to be in a suit for. And what's kind of interesting is the artwork for the Hiccup and Toothless meet and greet that was unveiled today as part of the Universal Parks walking out all this concept art and video for, you know, How to Train Your Dragon Land, or the Island of Berk, excuse me. This looks more like an animatronic, you know, and which again is a wonderful throwback to what Islands of Adventure had their Triceratops encounter back in 99. I have to admit, I immediately began reaching out to friends at Universal, and it's like, that's not a suit, is it? That's an animatronic. And they're right. Like, la, 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 not listening. You know, I signed an NDA, you know.
Yeah. So that's what I was asking, really, because, you know, if they have this suit and I'm the 2019 walk around, I don't know. It just, That was one of the major things that I was looking at. But like you referenced, we're talking, you know, the video came out today, and I think it was about a 6, maybe 7 minute video from Universal that dove right in. And there was also an accompanying 2 minute video, which was just the flyover, which was the animated flyover, which got you a little dizzy. You felt like you were a dragon, but I did watch it. And then I watched the other videos several times. So you can find it on YouTube, and it really did a good job. And I love these style videos where it's, you know, you're talking to people throughout, you know, you're talking to animators, you're talking to concept artists, people that help build, and they're just giving you little tidbits. And they did give you a lot of information today that I didn't readily know besides overhead pictures, but it's nice to actually see it all put together and have it come together as a one unified video.
So, all right. So talk to me, what grabbed your attention? I mean, again, and this has got to be challenging because if you're not familiar with the films, it's like, okay, what grabbed your attention?
Well, I mean, to start, the coaster itself looked great. So they have like, and I think it's a little bit more than just a family coaster. I mean, it's not, I don't know if it's necessarily going to be the biggest thrill ride in the park. I'm not sure if it has inversions or so forth, but I like the style and the theming. They made it out like it was, what Hiccup was, he's an inventor, as I can tell. So yeah, Hiccup's wing gliders or, you know, is what they, and I guess Toothless is upset by us trying to fly, so he must push us. So it sounds like there must be some type of launch aspect of it. So I like the theming of that. And there's, and it seems like you're going over a lot of water in different areas. And one thing, when I first started paying attention to this project, it seems like it goes all around the land. It is not just a small little coaster. It seems like it travels all over. And I remember that sticking out to me. So that caught my eye. What was your original or overall thoughts?
Well, I mean, you kind of nailed it. One, Hiccup is an inventor. In fact, you know, what's so wonderful about the first film is his dad, Stoic the Vast, is a classic Viking, the big beefy guy, you know, with, you know, the horned helmet and all muscle and mass, and Hiccup is this kind of little runt of a teen, but that's the thing, he's a Viking who's inventive, and he, so to have him having crafted sort of this training coaster, but yeah, that element of Toothless launching the coaster. What's wonderful about that, Eric, is that's a throwback to back when Universal, when they were originally going to do Second Gate for Florida, they were going to do Tooniversal Studios.
Okay.
And the gimmick of that park is that they were going to use all Warner Brothers IP. And one of the signature coasters of the park was going to be, you know, you were going to be helping Wile E. Coyote try to catch the Roadrunner. And there was this wonderful moment where you finally get, you know, you're winding your way through canyons to get to the load station. And here is, it's literally a rocket from right. The Acme Corporation.
I was going to say all Acme right. Rocket.
Okay, so you climb into your Acme rocket, and then when it's time for launch, this mechanical hand comes out with a match and literally goes, you know, to the back of your coaster and lights the fuse, and then you blast off. And it was like, so, you know, again, this lovely bit of animation, this mechanical thing that was going to be happening. And again, As Jim Scholl always loved to say, you know, good ideas never die. And so I love that somebody has now, you know, somebody at Universal remembered that. And it's like, well, instead of a hand and with a match lighting it, why don't we have Toothless kick us out the door?
Speaking of Jim Scholl and projects and so forth, I know you guys are working on this month's episode, which deals with shooting galleries and so forth. And I'll tell you what really got me excited was the fire drill. So have you seen this? Have you seen kind of what this – this is something I've never seen. It seems super intriguing. Of course, wear your poncho. It sounds like you're going to get soaked.
Yeah. I mean, I have to say this, you know, in fact, Len today, when we were talking about this on Disney Dish, predicted that this will be the breakout hit for this land. But I've been down in Orlando enough times, you know, in November, December, January, where it's like, yeah, I don't want to get wet. And in fact, you know, that there were so many times when it's like, when I'm at Islands, I'd love to take in Popeye and Bluto's bilge rat barges, or for that matter, Dudley Do-Right's Ripsaw Falls. But it's like, I don't want to get wet. I'm a wimp. So it's like, this might be one that I would stand on the shore and watch, particularly during the colder months of the year. On the other hand, I would be very happy to watch you and Mason, you know, climb on a boat and go out and spray Perfect Strangers. You know?
Right. So then the whole concept, I guess, is both sides of the boat are fighting against each other and shooting targets. Yeah. So I don't know if that's been done.
Well, have we talked on any of the earlier Epic Universal shows about what they do at Universal Studios Japan, like the One Piece show, where you know they say the characters from that manga literally stand on stage with water cannons and spray the audience. So and again, the people of Japan love it. So it's like just kind of interesting that we're seeing this, you know, shows from the other Universal parks travel in mutated form here to Orlando, which again brings us to that Untrainable Dragon show. What did you think of that?
What I have to do, and this is where I think many of the Universal Curious and those who haven't visited yet have to do, it reminded me, and I said, well, I like the Finding Nemo show at Animal Kingdom, right? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what it made me think of, is a, hey, here's a, not just a real quick show. It looks elaborate with good costumes, good props, screens, all the whole gamut. So I enjoy, especially when you're in Florida in the summer or just in general in the heat, it's always nice to go inside and see something like this. And it seems like, you know, there's enough action to keep you intrigued, and I'm sure there's a good enough story. And once again, you're seeing dragons. So I was all for that. I have no qualms or issues with that show whatsoever. What is that? What it is, Jim, have you seen, since it's out there, I'm sure we could watch it on YouTube, but have you dove into it at all?
You know, I have not, but that's an excellent suggestion. I'll have to do that out ahead of our next show. And we'll tell you about it. Well, let's do that. We can talk about it that on our next installment.
Sure. And then the last thing that I don't know if it is the Dragon Racers Rally. And from what I understand, you get to control how crazy you're going to be. And it's almost like you're on a stick, you know, and you fly up and you spin around individually. For me, I'm not necessarily into the teacups in the middle of the sky and getting sick myself. But hey, I'm sure that will be great for the thrill seeker. My son, who's 17, would probably love that.
I quick question to the theme park professionals who listen to the show here. I look at that and, the Dragon Racer Rally, and that looks very familiar to me. Is that, that's not a custom ride, is it? I mean, it just, is this something that came out of a catalog that you know, Universal is now rethemed to the How to Train Your Dragon world? If anybody has an answer to that, love to hear back from them. And then what? There's, again, with the idea that they're building this area for the whole family.
Right.
We have our Viking training camp, which, given we were just talking about DreamWorks Land and all of its kid-friendly stuff there, This to me, though, looked a lot like what is the place at DCA? The
Grizzly.
Yeah, Redwood Creek. Yeah,
right.
That thing. Don't get me wrong. You know, it looks to have some lovely How to Train Your Dragon theming, but it just sort of looked like I've seen these elements before, and not to say that it won't be fun for small kids, but you know, I have been here before.
Right. Yeah. We spent our time there, and it serves its purpose, but at some point in time you outgrow it. And it's very rare that I find myself in those with the older kids. So, and we mentioned that we're going to meet Hiccup and Toothless. So it sounds to me like Hiccup would just be your standard character greeting, with Toothless. And that is where what exactly are we meeting here? Part of me was like, well, they could be a puppet outside of a wall or this or that, but I think it's going to be elaborate. And they really, in the video, really spoke up that moment in the movie, I guess, where Hiccup puts his arm out and then Toothless does it. So it sounds to me like that's going to be the magic photo shot that everyone's going to have. And they're going to say, all right, put your hand out. And I think that could be great for some.
Oh, no, that's killer. That's killer. Okay. So, all right. So you've enjoyed all your adventures. You're now hungry. You're now thirsty. Where are we headed?
Well, I guess Mead Hall is pretty iconic in the movies, and they spoke highly of that. And you're going to get yourself, I guess, the feast like a Viking. So I would really like to see how this, you know, I mean, it needs to be loud, and there needs to be clanging of, you know, cups and stuff for me to really feel that this is a Viking, you know, temple. But that's what it sounds like. It is.
Yeah, I just wonder, on the heels of a butter beer, and you know what we're going to get for beverages in this space, what they're going to, and what are the point? Well, of course you want your souvenir Viking mug, you know.
Of course. So. Well, it says cider, so maybe they'll pick up that apple cider and give that away.
There we go.
So, wow, this seems pretty interesting. The Spitfire Grill, and it sounds to me like, hey, we're gonna have some dragons whip us up some barbecue.
Yeah, that's well, you know, and what's kind of interesting is that, think about what is the restaurant at Ronto's Roaster?
Ronto's Roaster, yeah. Droids,
you know. I love the. I mean, that's one of the, I think, the clever ideas of Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, where, you know, you have your meat being cooked by an old, you know, pod engine, and you have this poor, miserable droid who's, you know, turning the meat on the spit. Okay, funny variation on that idea.
They can make this look. Now it says your meals are flame seared by a helpful unseen dragon fry cook. So you could do some really cool imagery there by, you know, somebody hold up a piece of meat or whatever and fire come out.
Oh,
there's all types of cool things you could do there that'll have the family talking.
No, definitely. I think you're onto what they're going to do there. And then what? We have a quick service, hooligans, grog, and gruel. Rounding out our choices there, and then of course it's a theme park. Of course, there's retail, so Viking traders, how to treat your dragon, and Hiccup's workshop and Toothless treasures. So, gotta say, if you know, to as walking this out, it is the first land. Face it, we saw our entrance plaza, we saw our park portion of. Epic universe, but to walk this out as the first one, great introduction, really, you know, got me excited about going to this park. So,
one thing that I'll tell you, Jim, so this is maybe what episode 5 of us talking. So essentially a couple months of where I said, hey, let's do a Universal podcast. I don't know anything about it, but I think it needs to be one on the network. And I know there's tons of talk about, I can effectively say that after 5 episodes, that's all it takes to convert me. Like, I am 100% there. The old tribalistic saying, a Universal, what are you talking about? I'm a Disney guy. I literally am just as jazzed, and I watched just as much on YouTube this week and read just as many articles on Universal than I would Disney. And it doesn't even feel wrong. That's all it takes. So if you're a Disney fan out there, if you're Universal curious, Just talk to Jim 5 times and we're good to go.
Well, there we go. Okay. Well, happy to hear that. And I'm also happy that we're getting to what, for my, to my thinking, is my favorite part of the show. And that's news or not. So, what did you chase down for me this week?
Well, Jim, I'm going to tell you that the big news was what we just talked about. So I believe that is huge news. Obviously. And I think that kind of gobbled up most of the stories this week. But I did find one, and I thought it was something to talk about, because the last episode we talked about the Florida residence deal for Disney. I think Florida residents were getting like a $63 ticket at Disney and so forth. So what we just cooked up is Florida residents can now visit Universal Orlando for free with a new ticket deal. So this is essentially Florida residents can purchase a 2-park, 1-day ticket. It comes with 2 free days under this new deal. So for, I think it's $199 price tag for adults, you're essentially getting 3 days, which is, once again, a good price. And it's valid for Florida and Georgia. So if you have a license at the time, my question, number one, is this news? Is that a good deal? And does this always happen in the summer? Does this all, like, are we seeing some back and forth going on right now for attendance?
Well, for me, what really intrigues me is that, you know, this is valid for folks in Florida and Georgia. I don't recall that being part of the deal previously. That's a really smart choice. I mean, when you think about the people who will drive down for a day, again, I mean, well, day's drive out of Georgia to Central Florida, but yeah, that's well, let's also be honest here. In fact, Glenn and I talk about this on this week or next week's Disney Dish. We're getting more and more info about Tiana's Bayou Adventure, and I think a June opening is optimistic, but early summer is definitely a possibility. And face it, Universal is now in that weird space where it's like you're going to have a bunch of people who say, "Do I want to go to Universal out ahead of Epic opening?" And more to the point, you know, do I want to go to Universal or do I want to go to Disney and sample Tiana? Putting these sorts of things on the table, making, you know, it's like, look at how much more affordable it is. It's a smart play, the bunch of smart cookies.
They gobble up all the vacation time of these people. So when it comes down to, they're like, sorry, we don't have any vacation time to go to Disney. So that could be the case. So these next two, I'll just combine them at this point in time. It looks to me like Revenge of the Mummy is going down for refurbishment June 2024, and E.T. is going down for May 2024. So it doesn't appear that their refurbishments are long. So Mummy is from the 17th to the 22nd, and E.T. is from the 6th of May to the 15th. So,
I have to say, and when you said that Revenge of the Mummy was going down for refurbishment, it's like, oh, no, not again, because it went down in 2021 and then didn't come back up till January of last year, 2023. So it was like, no. I mean, don't get me wrong. It came back. It was spectacular. They'd done a lot of work that was necessary. So there was a part of me, no. But the fact that it's less than a week,
But it could be, I chalk these up as, hey, they're not really news, right? I chalked them up as like, it's nice to know.
You have to remember, for example, the E.T. Adventure, there were a lot of folks who consider that a must see.
Listen, Jim, I will tell you right now, there's not a chance that I'm going down there and not seeing E.T. That is the attraction I am looking forward to. As goofy as that may sound, I am a nostalgia guy. I remember seeing that from the original commercials. If I got down there and it wasn't open, I'd be that pesky person going right to the front and saying, what's going on here?
You've ruined my vacation. Right. I will say this much. That the E.T. Adventure, especially the one in Orlando, has a lovely queue. And again, you enter the pine forest, and there's that pine scent, and you know, you make your way to the bike, and it's good right up until you fly off to the green planet, and then I'm not going to ruin for you, but I'm not a fan.
Well, Jim, you know, things look weird. Yeah. I mean, I've seen enough clips. It's definitely not like the movie. But it's, to me, is it the only original attraction left? That's what I've always heard. And I'm like, I feel if that's the only one left, protect it at all costs. As a fan of nostalgia, please protect that ride.
Okay. I would have to think on that. You know, is there anything else left in Universal Studios Florida at this point? Because face it, on the second half of today's show, we're going to talk about, an opening day attraction that was surprisingly short-lived, but still something that folks look back on. But again, before we do that, we got a couple of sponsors here who'd love to get your attention for a sec. So we'll be back in just a moment.
And we're back. And Jim, we were talking briefly about the ET and being an opening attraction, original attraction. And one that I, you know, when it came down to Universal Studios and what I remember seeing on commercials and so forth, it was always an ET. It was Jaws. It was something like King Kong. And to me, I always knew Ghostbusters.
Yeah. In fact, folks, when Eric and I were sussing out this week's show, Eric was pointed out that, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire just opened in theaters. In fact, number one at the box office this past weekend. Did the kids have any interest in this franchise or?
Yes. We watch Ghostbusters every Halloween. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we watched the second one. We watched the first every Halloween. I'm a big fan. Always have enjoyed it. And, you know, and when I was a kid, I had all their little action figures from the animated cartoons and so forth. We're fans of Paul Rudd. And after watching the trailer, I'm like, this Paul Rudd's a Ghostbuster. Come on.
Well, now, did you catch the film that sort of put this one in motion, the Ghostbusters Afterlife? They've been trying to get another sequel going since Ghostbusters 2 came out in 86. So when this came out in November of 2021 and was a solid success, but also really leaned into kind of a kid-friendly take on it. Did you get to see that one at all?
One flew right by me. It was one of those where it must have came out when I was just daydreaming about something else.
Okay. Well, not to worry. I mean, you know, what we're talking about, we're using Frozen Empire as an excuse to look back at the Ghostbusters right. Spooktacular. That was one of the anchors of the New York Street section of Universal Studios Florida, and the other one, of course, being Kongfrontation.
Now, Jim, Godzilla Kong, the new empire, so that just arrives in theater this coming weekend, right? So, talking about, you know, Ghostbusters because of a film. Maybe we should just talk about Kongfrontation, something I'm highly interested in, maybe the next Universal show.
Ooh, that is an excellent suggestion. Okay, let's put up that on the list. So that said, Ghostbusters, Frozen Empire, Godzilla Kong, the new empire, the folks at Disney doing their Imperial March thing for Star Wars. And what is the deal with all the empires all of a sudden? A little history before we take off here, folks. Original Ghostbusters comes out in June of 1984. It's a Columbia Pictures release, directed by Ivan Reitman, written by Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis. Was originally supposed to be a starring vehicle for Aykroyd and his good friend and Saturday Night Live co-star John Belushi, but that plan obviously had to change when Belushi tragically died of a drug overdose in 82. And Eric, back in the day, this was, considered a huge financial risk on Columbia Pictures' part because, it had the enormous production price of $25 to $30 million. And, are we ever going to make – are we going to make that money back?
Was that 3 days? Well, 3 days of production now?
Well, no, that's not exactly. But okay, so the original Ghostbusters makes $282 million. It's actually the highest grossing film for all of 1984. And so immediate talk of sequels and turning this thing into a franchise. And you just mentioned the real Ghostbusters animated series.
Oh, yeah.
That arrives, shows up on television in September of 86. And the first sequel, Ghostbusters 2, debuts nearly 3 years later in June of 89. But where this really gets interesting is behind the scenes. There is a race going on to see which company is going to score the theme park rights, the Ghostbusters. And I shared a piece of art today with Eric. That I came across four great moments at the movies. That was what Disney MGM's thesis attraction was supposed to be called back when Sears, yes, Sears, was supposed to sponsor whatever was going to be built inside of the Chinese theater. So, Eric, can you describe this piece of art that shows what was being considered for the great movie right back then?
Right. Yeah. No, this was it's quite fascinating. And I will tell you, because I'm a good pitch man or a hype man for that matter. You guys definitely covered this on an early episode of Disney Unpacked. We actually seen it and Aaron did an amazing job highlighting and actually animating the whole sequence. But what really stands out, was the fact that Ghostbusters, the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, is drawn right on there.
Yeah, I mean, well, what's fascinating about this, folks, is you are in your tram car. And in fact, I think the way they had it positioned, you was coming out of the Sigourney Weaver hiding in the Nostromo with the aliens coming down and attacking you scene. And the very next show scene you were supposed to roll into, you're now on the rooftop of 550 West Central Park West, where the Shandor Tower is located, where the temple has opened and Gozer the Gozerian. And in fact, that to your right as your tram rolls into the show scene, Gozer the Gozerian is standing on the steps of the temple, and the two devil dogs are alive and growling at you. But to your left are animatronic versions of Dan Aykroyd, Bill Murray, Harold Ramis, and damn it, I'm blanking who plays Winston. I'm ashamed about that. But anyway, it's Ray, Egon, Peter, and Winston. And they've got their power packs on. And as Eric just described, what's looming over them is this full-size version. Well, not full-size. You can see him from, the waist up of the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. But, it would have been killer. But here's the thing. Universal Creative gets there first. And they say to Columbia, oh, come on, we're not going to waste the Ghostbusters with a single scene in an attraction that has all sorts of movies. We'll build an entire attraction around these characters. Not only that, we'll do a daily street show out there, at the front of the park. And by the way, speaking of ghosts, fun side note, a Universal Picture made Casper, a supernatural family comedy built around the Casper the Friendly Ghost cartoons, also the Harvey comics. And that was released in May of 1995. It actually features a cameo by Dan Aykroyd. He's playing his race dance character. He's dressed in his Ghostbuster outfit. This lovely exchange. He's actually racing out of the house that's being haunted by Casper's uncles. And, he walks up to the camera and says, who are you going to call? You're going to call somebody else. I'm not doing this.
Right.
It's a great gag. Great, great gag. But anyway, on the heels of that film, again, released at theaters May of 1995, Universal Creative had a Casper the Friendly Ghost attraction in the works for its park. And Eric, you'll love this. All right. The gimmick of this proposed haunted house ride was your ride vehicle was a four-poster bed, which, surprise, surprise, seats four people. But the kicker is that this attraction was supposed to be a you-choose-your-own-path experience. So at multiple points inside of the ride, you'd be prompted to, you know, reach for your bedpost and twist the bed knob. And depending on what direction you push the bedpost, you twisted the knob. And again, it's the majority of the people in the ride vehicle have to make this choice. But that's the room you go into, or that's the thing you do.
Wow.
And, it would have been so cool. Again, sadly, Casper didn't do well enough at the box office to warrant Universal putting this thing into production, but a killer idea. All right. Anyway, back to the Ghostbusters Spooktacular, which sit-down theater experience. And what's kind of interesting, and again, you were just talking about the art for the great movie, right? The folks at Universal decided that too was going to be the scene they'd recreate for their sit-down attraction, the battle at the top of 550 Central Park West, the Gozer Temple. Right. And now what's especially interesting about this, now, have you ever watched any of the videos of the Spooktacular or?
Yeah. I've seen clips of it. We, you know,
okay.
enough to see that Stay Puffin and be like, man, that looks impressive.
It was, but what was especially impressive about the Spooktacular was the physical plant. That now I know you as a Disney fan, you have been in the Haunted Mansion. You have been, you know, on your Doom Buggy and rolled by the Grand Ballroom, and you've seen the party going on, and you know that effect is pulled off through the use of Pepper's Ghost. You have ghosts above you and ghosts below you, and that's done, you know, using reflections and lit figures that are behind you and that sort of thing. And that's what Universal Creative decided they wanted to do with their Spooktacular attraction. They would put this hugely polished piece of glass between the live performers on stage and the animatronic ghosts, which were, by the way, were actually behind the guests in the theater. Again, you were looking forward. You didn't see these things when they would light up behind you and get activated. So anyway, the overall conceit of this show is after you've gone through the queue, for this theater experience, and you now entered the soundstage where the Temple of Gozer set from the original Ghostbusters movie has been set up. And there's a production assistant, a Universal cast member on stage, a young woman. She directs you to your seat, and she starts to walk you through how this hit Columbia Pictures movie was made. But she, as kind of a throwaway line, is, well, you know, and I don't believe in no ghosts. And so, that's just enough to set this thing in motion, because now suddenly Slimer appears that she seemed, it seemed to be first he's on her left and then he's on her right. And
okay.
Then even bigger animatronic ghosts, you know, suddenly start to appear. And by the way, have you ever seen Killer Clowns from Outer Space from
A? I have not, Jim. I know of it. I have not seen that.
It is a wonderful, terrible movie. Okay. You know, just that's the only way to describe it. It's awful and amusing, and you won't forget it, even though you want to. But anyway, the Cheeto brothers, who designed all the clowns for that movie, they actually designed a number of the animatronic ghosts for Ghost the Spooktacular, which is why, I mean, I was so happy when I heard that, because I was like, I have seen these things before. Where have I seen these things? It's the Killer Clowns from Outer Space. So,
All right.
Anyway, eventually the doors open to the temple. Gozer the Gozerian steps out. The devil dogs appear. And, you know, all seems lost for this poor female production assistant until the Ghostbuster theme song plays. And four Universal Florida cast members in jumpsuits and proton packs come on stage. And of course, you know, the Gozer the Gozerian is choose. And, you know, choose your form. And this is when the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, who is it's an oversized prop. It's not an animatronic right. necessarily, but it rises up to the back of the stage, and the Ghostbusters square off and power up their proton packs. And you know, long story short, they blast Stay Puft, they defeat Gozer, they rescue that mouthy tour guide who now does believe in ghosts, by the way. but anyway, it's a very technologically complex show. And what was kind of interesting about it is Universal, because they wanted to do 4 an hour, built this mechanism to run the show. Very sturdy, very reliable. In fact, what's kind of interesting is this Ghostbusters Spooktacular was one of the only attractions that actually worked at that theme park during its infamous first summer in 1990. When Eric and I were initially pre-gaming the show, and he was talking about, should we talk about Spooktacular? It's like, oh, we got to talk about the opening day of the park. And it's like, which is, if you've ever seen a shot of the opening ceremony, it's literally Steven Spielberg with a pair of scissors cutting this ribbon of film, but he's surrounded by, you know, all of these movie actors and people right. like Joe Hanna and Bill Barbera and, you know, all of these folks. But anyway, so they then begin to tour all of these celebrities around the park. And it's like, hey, let's try the rides. And everything breaks down. Everything malfunctions. In fact, there's a famous story about how the Jaws ride actually stops. And the president of Universal Studios, because he needs to be at another ceremony in the park, they send out a rowboat and take him off the boat and bring him to shore. So, but again, the only thing that works the way this is supposed to is the Spooktacular. So they had brought the celebrities in. They had a lovely time. And later in the day, the walkie-talkie backstage goes off and it's like, we're bringing the celebrities back. And it's like, why? You were here. You know, it's like, yeah, nothing's working. We don't want them to go back to the hotel having, you know, be their last experience being something that didn't work. We're coming back. So anyway, for a show that was surprisingly successful, or at least for that first summer, Spooktacular was surprisingly short-lived, Eric. It only ran for 5 years and 5 months. It closes November of 1996. And what's interesting is in between its opening and again in June of 1990 and its closing in November of 1996, they actually redid the show. They swapped out that female production assistant tour guide character and brought in Louis Tully, the Rick okay. Moranis yeah. nerdy accountant character.
Yeah.
And so why the change? Well, the original version of Ghostbusters Spooktacular had a lot of dialogue in the front half of the show. And what Universal learned the hard way is a lot of its client base early on came from South America or Europe, and they didn't necessarily speak English. And after sitting there, you know, for 5 to 10 minutes of somebody standing on stage, you know, before they pyred up the effect, there were a number of people who were like, ugh, they got up and walked out of the theater. So the thinking was, okay, so if we put Louis Tully on stage, or some, you know, a Universal team member dressed as Louis Tully, you know, people like, oh, that guy I know from the Ghostbusters movies, something's going to happen. I will stay. That slowed the walkouts, didn't stop them. Plus, again, as it turned out, the show was surprisingly slow to load and slow to empty. So what was originally supposed to be 4 shows an hour mutated into 3 shows an hour. And then when you think about how, you have 6 live performers on stage,
right.
you have to pay them, you have to have double and triple performers hired to cover for them. Plus those huge panes of glass had to constantly be cleaned and polished.
The Windex, so. The amount of Windex you must
there
buy.
There we go, right there. Get the line item, the monthly budget right. for Windex was horrifying. So in the end, Universal Creative opted to, A, go with an attraction that was based on a Universal-owned property, Twister, which was released to theaters in May of 96. Huge success. And by the way, its long-in-the-works sequel, Twisters, arrives in theaters July 19th of this year. But right. Anyway, Twister, Ride It Out opens at Universal Studios Florida in May of 1998, has a 17-year-long run of... closes November of 2015, winds up being replaced by Race Through New York, starring Jimmy Fallon, which opens April 2017. And I'm going to love taking you to see this, Eric, because, you know, when we finally get you down into the park, because it has a lovely physical plant. I mean, your queue space is this amazing museum that celebrates the Tonight Show. You get to look at all sorts of props from the Steve Allen and the Johnny Carson and, you know, the Jay Leno era. They even do a nod to the 5 minutes at Conan O'Brien.
That's it. I'll be standing there the whole time, Jim. Just
okay.
With my Windex cleaning the case. That's what I'll say. Nobody touches this pristine.
That's lovely to hear. Now, mind you, you get upstairs, and the pre-show is actually nice as well. You have a place to sit down. You can charge your phone. The one place this falls apart is the actual ride, which is kind of meh.
Yeah.
But no, I'm gonna love to get your take on this. But before we close out here, also have to mention that Universal for a time had a Ghostbusters street show where Ray, Peter, Egon, and Winston were hunting for Beetlejuice, which was another popular movie character that Universal had acquired the theme park rights to. And again, fun little side note here, Wayne Brady, who, you know, Orlando boy, got his career performing career started playing Tigger at the Disney parks and damn near got heat stroke in that outfit. When given the opportunity to begin playing a face character, which meant no heavy, sweaty suit, he said, absolutely. So he wound up over at Universal playing Winston in the Ghostbusters street show. But
that is something I've never heard before, but that is fantastic to know. Mm-hmm. But the other thing that I was thinking of, so what actually played out ahead of the Ghostbusters Frozen Empire that just came around was actually the Beetlejuice sequel. And I was told and by my wife, my daughter, everybody. But that actually opens September 6th of this year. So maybe when Beetlejuice arrives in theaters, we can discuss that.
I love that idea. Okay. Let's throw that on the pile. And by the way, you know, just took a moment here. The Winston Zeddemore was played by Ernie Hudson. So my apologies for blanking his name, but again, wanted to make that correction before we close out here. But by the way, folks, if you have any fond memories of the Ghostbusters Spooktacular sit-down show or the street show, in fact, every so often I will have people show me pictures that they got taken with Wayne Brady in his Ghostbuster outfit. Awesome. Yeah, please feel to share those with us, and we may include those on a future edition of the Epic Universal podcast.
No, absolutely. And tell you the truth, I've loved talking to everybody online. We've been getting some great messages. Jim, I can't wait to show you some of the stuff we got, some direct messages, some really interesting information about Epic Universe and how long it takes to walk there from the main students. Mm-hmm. And this is all stuff coming through. So we really enjoy it when you guys share some of us. And I think there was even a Triceratops on Twitter that was shared this week that we all kind of commented on. It was really great. So keep it coming.
And a tip of the hat to our buddy BioReconstruct, who continues to do absolutely amazing stuff when it comes to this park. In fact, the flyover, did you see the flyover we shared of the Yoshi ride doing tests?
Listen, I've watched more BioReconstruct than I probably watched on Disney Plus, so I think I owe him like $12.
We'll see you. Yeah, $12 a month to BioReconstruct.
Yeah.
Keep that copter flying. Okay,
that's cool. It. Absolutely. So Jim, if anybody wants to send you some pictures of Wayne Brady, where can they find you at?
Well, okay, let's see. I'm on X and Instagram as Jim Hill Media, and over on Facebook at Jim Hill Media News. Likewise, if folks are looking to reach out to you, where in the social media spheres should they look for you?
Hey, I'm becoming way more active on Twitter for the first time in 10 years because there's a reason to tweet now. So that's just at Eric Hersey, and you can also find me over on Instagram at the exact same tag, Eric Hersey.
Got it. Okay. And as we close out here, I want to remind you, we have some other podcasts we'd love you to go check out. We, of course, have Disney Dish. We do with Len Testa. Likewise, Fine Tuning with Drew Taylor. And just a nod, tip of the hat to Mr. Taylor. He and Charles Hood have an equally lovely and informative and fun podcast of their own, Light the Fuse, the official Mission Impossible podcast. We just put up a brand new Looking at Lucasfilm with Brian Gunn. And I think your bride and I are about to get back in the saddle for a new I Want That, right?
I believe so. She's asked me to pull out all of our tikis. Our little tiki guys.
That's
so I believe
right.
you guys
that's
are
right. We're
do
doing a tiki
cool
show.
Tiki's. Right.
That's right. That reminds me. I need to reach out to Ken Bruce about his Enchanted Tiki Before the Birds Sang Words book.
It just came in the mail last week for me. So we'll be reading it here in the Hersey house.
Oh,
cheap
cool,
plug.
Cool, cool. There we go. All right. And of course, we have the Disney Unpacked video series that we do with veteran Imagineer Jim Shull, which you can find over on Patreon at patreon.com/Jim Hill Media.
Right. And we mentioned it earlier, the shooting arcade, shooting gallery. That's what's coming up. You guys are talking anything and everything Buzz Lightyear in this next one. And I think that comes out here the first Sunday in April.
Yeah, I want to say that is the 7th. So, yeah, and we're going from shooting galleries right through to, God, how many Buzz Lightyears? Well, I think there were 6 at one point. Now there's 5. Lots of fun stuff in that show, which, by the way, I just viewed the first edit of last night, and great work, Eric. You did some good stuff.
So. Well, you guys are telling the stories. I'm just getting to watch a bunch of YouTube videos and figuring out where to match it up. So I'm all happy with it. But yeah, good and stuff. You know what? I'm happy with today. I'm happy that we got some information. I have some new films to watch. I'm excited about the Isle of Burke and all the things Universal. So I say we put a wrap on this one. And on behalf of Jim Hill, I'm Eric Hersey. Thanks for listening.